Welcome to Season 3 of Soccer Over Gotham, an NWSL podcast covering New Jersey, New York, Gotham FC. Hosted by Ruby Pinto and Gary Gibson. Welcome to Episode 82 of Soccer Over Gotham, Challenge Cup and World Cup edition. We have a great show for all of you. Gary, what do we have in this episode?
We have a whole lot. The group stage of the Challenge Cup is now complete. We're going to recap the final two games against the Courage and the Pride. This is something that we never get tired of, which is Abby Smith winning another save of the week. Hashtag Abby for NWSL MVP. Mana Shim gets our first goal since 2015. And we turn our attention to the regular season and the Shield hunt after a disappointing end to the Challenge Cup and preview our next matchup against the Wave. Our guest this week is hashtag Once Gotham. Just an interesting human being, former coach of the Jamaican women's national team, former Gotham interim coach. We got Hugh Menzies, y'all. We're going to talk to him about the rise of the reggae girls and their incredible journey. And of course, we're going to ask him to reflect on his time at Gotham. He's got some incredible stories. I can't wait to let you guys to hear it. There's just so much to talk about, Ruby. Let's get started. How are you?
I'm doing okay, I say. I mean, it's Gary. It's been rough, okay? It's been rough. Yeah. We had a U.S. women's national team loss, so they're out of the World Cup. Now, Gotham is out of the Challenge Cup. I've been emotional. I think I need like a break from all of this, like all this heartbreak and all these things. But I just want to mention that Hugh Menzies, like his interview, it was incredible. So if you guys haven't listened to it on our YouTube, you guys are going to enjoy this interview. Pretty much we get like the behind the scenes of everything these girls had to do to get to where they are. So incredible, incredible, incredible. But yeah, like you said, now we have the championship and the Shield to look forward to. But other than that, I just want to say that I started running again and I kind of hate it, but I kind of love it afterwards. It feels good. So what have you been up to, Gary?
I have a lot of respect for runners. My mind has to be entertained at all times. So it's like I'm very good at like playing sports where actions all the time. But if you leave me to my own devices and running, my mind is just on everything I could be doing and not running. So I've not been able to master that yet. But yeah. Yeah. But going back to the Hugh Menzies interview, as you said, it's amazing. And it was made me feel so good because I still think our best episode was the last one of last season. I just felt like we got the energy right. That game was incredible. And we told the story of that game from a fan's perspective of the crowd and how Cloud Nine was off the hook. And it was just like, it was an amazing event. And I hadn't had a chance to talk to anybody about it from like the team, and I've been wanting to do that, and it's been eating at me that I have not been able to do that, because I know there's so much more to that story than just, you know, our fan perspective. And when I noted we getting Hugh on the podcast, I was like, I am not letting him off this podcast.
This is your chance.
Yeah, to ask him about that. And of course, he's the perfect person to ask because he knows all the stories and he, you know, about Ashlyn and Allie Long coming. It's incredible. And he talks about how, you know, he's the one who is responsible for bringing Bernina to this team.
Yep.
He had such an impactful last half of the season. The interview itself is about 55 minutes long. It's Gotham stuff starts around like minute 40-ish. But I obviously listen to the whole thing because it's incredible. But if you're interested just in the Gotham stuff, it's like 40 minutes in on. But
on our YouTube, by the way. That's on the YouTube.
I put it on the YouTube, but we're going to put it at the end of this episode too. So it's connected to us. All right. We're actually doing pretty well with our YouTube downloads. Hopefully next season I'll be better at video editing. We do more content over there. I'm excited about it. On a personal level, I finally finished a book. I know. Again, I used to read at least 3 books a month, and I haven't read one in like 2 years. It's killing me. So I finally finished one. It's called The Word is Murder by Anthony Horowitz. It's an incredible story. It's about an older woman who goes into a funeral parlor, plans her funeral from top to bottom. Oh, and then she goes home and gets murdered.
Oh my God. What the hell? That sounds so interesting.
Yes, it is very, very interesting. And it's what makes it really, really interesting is that it's written from the author's perspective.
Yeah.
And it's the actual author's perspective. Like, it's him writing the book. Like, it's really cool. Just definitely give it a chance. But all right, let's get to some of the fan stuff, which is Player of the Month of July. And the fans chose Purse as the Player of the Month for July. Do you agree, Ruby?
I mean, Purse has been on a mission since she got back from injury. She might have missed the World Cup, but now she's looking to go to the Olympics. So I do agree with that. I do agree that she's Player of the Month. She was great contribution to the team, especially now that we don't have the Nationals.
Yeah. Purse was the only player in consideration for Player of the Match in every single match in July. So she's been on fire since returning.
I know, but it's kind of hard just to give it to someone, like just to one person, because I feel they all have done their part. I mean, Nyswanger, Rookie of the Month, Smith with brilliant saves week after week. They're just all really good.
Yes. Speaking of Abby, we got another save of the week. I think it's six so far this season. We got August 9th, June 13th, June 9th, May 18th, May 3rd. And the 25th of April, there could be others, but she's having an incredible season. And yeah, Abby for MVP, let's go. Now, getting to these games, the first, like before we get to the Courage game, we have to kind of look at the standings of where we were and where we're going. Where we were at that time, entering the Courage, we were in third place with 7 points. The Courage were in at 11 points at the top. We had two games to catch up. We see if we can get there. In order for Gotham to make it out of the group, they needed to either get one win and a draw and get help from KC losing, or simply win both games against the Courage and Orlando. The Courage is on fire coming into this game. 11 goals in two matches, despite missing Sullivan, Murphy, Caroline, they are top of the league and top of the group. The Courage have everything to play for. If they beat Gotham or even draw Gotham, they're essentially through. Now, there is a chance that they can go from top of the group to missing out on the Challenge Cup playoffs if they lose to Gotham. So they are in this one. Onto the injury report, nothing really too much of note. Svava is still out. But onto the formation, Smith in goal, Freeman on the right, Jean and Krieger in the middle, and Nyswanger on the left. The midfield of Sheehan, Zerboni, and Martin. Stengel, Purse, and Ryan across the top. Any thoughts on this lineup, Ruby?
So in this lineup, we have Martin back with Smith starting in this lineup as well. She didn't start last time. And even though Nyswanger has been doing great in defense, I still think in my head, it makes sense. I still think that she would be better in midfield. I think she has that potential to be like a top goal scorer. I think Gotham needs someone like her to be able to get like up front and take those shots.
On paper, when I saw this lineup and I saw the Courage's lineup, in my head, I'm like, this roster should dominate the Courage. This is a solid lineup. Even if every team had their national team players back, I think this is a competitive lineup.
Yeah.
Gotham has built a ridiculous roster, even with the missing the national teamers. This bench is silliness. It's got Long, it's got Taylor Smith, it's got Edmonds, it's got Shim, Lopez. Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely crazy bench that we have. It's such a valuable asset to have such talent on the bench.
Yeah, and we'll probably get this also in the second game, but I think that with a must-win game, they went with the number one keeper in Smith, who had a bit of a couple games off, I think, right? So she was just getting her back into the flow of things. I think it was a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
Gotham just came out and just had the perfect game plan against the top possession team in the league, which was just let them have the ball. But only in their defensive third, and it just worked to perfection.
Yeah, I mean, their tactical approach was spot on and gave them the ability to control the game's tempo.
Yeah, they controlled the tempo from that high block. It just worked to perfection. The blockade in the middle of Zerboni, Martin, and then Krieger and Jean just covering was just suffocating the middle of the field. And if a pass got through Martin and Zerboni, Krieger would just make a dead sprint and force that player back into the mix. They let the Courage just hold the ball through the back four and just jumped on any forward passes. They made the field so small and congested. Yeah. The Courage just couldn't pass through them. It could only go side to side. The field tilt was all Gotham. The Courage had absolutely no options out except for just playing long balls over the top. And Gotham's back line, they were holding the offside line very well. And yeah, and when, as soon as Gotham would recover a long ball, they would just immediately play the ball back into the Courage's deep and just pin them in again. I don't have the exact stats, but I can imagine there was more than 15 or 20 passes by the Courage in Gotham's half in that first half. And that feels kind of generous. So it was just total domination by Gotham.
Total domination, absolutely. Kind of sucks that there's not many stats for the Challenge Cup. So we kind of have to like really dig onto like these stats. Gotham effectively dictated the flow of the game. I mean, leaving the Courage just struggling to find their foothold. For Gotham to be able to do this to the Courage team was indeed a masterclass. Definitely it was. I mean, North Carolina's last two games, like we've been saying, 6-0 to Washington, 5-0 to Orlando. You think that Gotham would come out and intimidated, but they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to this later, but it was a solid team performance where it was really hard to narrow down four players of the match. I probably could have just gone with offense, midfield, defense, and coaching staff. And they all deserved it at the end.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. But one player that we're going to talk about our players, player notes. Mm-hmm. One player that I would like to highlight, it's Serboni. She often flies under the radar, but constantly shines when it matters the most. I mean, she's aggressive when it's needed, and she scores goals when it's needed as well.
Yeah, I think it got lost in the shuffle last season because she was captain of the team, and the team was just not playing well, and nobody was playing well. So I think people maybe discounted how impactful she can be on games. And again, she's a two-time NWSL winner, two-time Shield winner. She's an incredible athlete, and I think her impact is showing this year because she's had more freedom and you know, with this team. I do think it also stinks that Stengel is only ours for one more month. You know, early September, she is gone. She's been a great target forward, and she just stays in the mix in just a handful for defenders.
I know. She's a good one. She's really a good one, and it's going to be hard to see her go. I mean, she's been scoring, and we're going to miss that if we can't, like, find a solution to our final third, which that's what we're struggling on right now, like, finding that, you know, that chemistry and the strikers to be able to finish off. But I want to move on to something else. You have been talking about Martin a lot. And I am noticing her more and more now that you have mentioned her. She's so effective in her position. And I think she would have made a difference in the last game against Washington where she did not start.
Yeah, I mean, good on the scouting team. They took an undrafted player that Racing used as an outside back and a center back. And they saw something in her and converting her to defensive mid. She's been really good. And I think there's a bright future for her on this team. Yep. And considering how deep this midfield is, for her to earn the coach's trust to be a starter, you know, game after game, that says a lot about her, which, yeah, great.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully this is the first of many must-win games for this team. I think Gotham met the moment in this one. They showed up. They showed out. The team was in sync and really showed how good they can be. I mean, even with the national team players away, I think there's just so much talent on that bench.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, despite missing those key players due to the World Cup, this team has so much talent. I mean, this victory not only secured the much needed points, but also served as a statement to their capability and determination.
Yeah. We're probably going to get to it again, but shout out to the entire coaching staff. Phenomenal game plan. They used the Courage's strength against them, and they had no answer.
Yeah. And I just want to say, too, that Abby Smith played a big part in this game. She's always making those key saves. And like when you think they're going to score, she makes these exceptional like saves.
Yeah, it was a pretty lively but light crowd for this one, which is a shame. I mean, but man, Cloud Nine was super loud in that arena. Yeah. Hopefully this club can get a World Cup boost in attendance because this team is too fun. It is too fun right now to miss a single game. You got to see this team play live if you haven't. The stadium should be packed. It's an incredible venue. It's a cathedral to soccer.
Yeah, I'm kind of tempted to just like one game go and like hang out with them.
I know. I was like, I'm driving to the arena and I'm looking around. I'm like, just give me like 50 tickets. I just want to walk around and just grab people off the street and bring them to this game. Because right. There's these people just are hanging around the stadium, like, just go in.
Yeah.
Catch a good game. But let's get some post-game quotes. Ryan says that the team entered this match with championship mentality. This is what big games are like. If they want to be in the playoffs, this is what it's all about. I'm saying if this type of performance we're going to get from this team in these type of games, they can win anything.
I think my, like, the word of the day for me is key because, you know, like, just maintaining this level of performance is key in like, these games that are so important. And, I mean, they were able to get that win and just have a chance to make it to the Challenge Cup semifinals with this win.
Amoros also says that Freeman is really good on the ball and has a good understanding of tactics and has been a strong option at outside back. Ellie Jean has been strong at center back. She's a hard worker, consistent, and one that often goes under the radar. And I agree with all that. I think an extension would be nice for Jean sooner rather than later.
Yeah, consistent is right. And Ellie Jean is definitely a hard worker. I mean, she has been player of the match before, and I would like to keep her here at Gotham. I mean, she will benefit the team if she stays.
Yeah. Any stats of the game?
Yes. So my stat of the game is Gotham with 35% possession, yet they won 2-0. This is another example of quality over quantity.
All right. I got one stat, and it is the most undebatable stat out there. And it's the Tonelli scale. And this is a 5 candy corn. This is a Krieger in the candy corn Gotham jersey style dominance stat that we have for this game. So undebatable, way to go, team. Let's get to our player of the game. On Twitter at Over Gotham Pod, fans chose defense. Thanks to the fans who voted. Do you agree, Ruby?
I say the whole team. That's my player of the game.
Yeah, team defense. You defend as a team. How could it not be defense? I think shutting out a team that scored 11 goals in 2 games and allowing only 2 shots on target and in 5 in total is pretty incredible. Yeah. However, Ruby, 2 things can be true at the same time. Yes, it's team defense. Yet somehow, I think Sheehan is underrepresented in this poll. Like, I know for a little bit they were trying to make her a 9, but to me, she's a 10 and she needs to be on the ball more.
I know. I think Gotham ruined the party for North Carolina. They probably thought they were going to come and like do a 4-5-6-0, but hell no.
Yeah. All right. Let's get over to the second game. This one, we win and we're in. And Orlando Pride, we're playing for just that, Pride. And yeah. I love puns. All right. On the East, North Carolina is at 11 points. Gotham is at 10. But all eyes were on KC as they held the key. There you go. The word again. To whether Gotham needed to win this game or draw. Well, KC took care of business. Racing is now the top second place team at 12. Therefore, only a win will get Gotham through to the knockouts. They're entering on the back of 4 straight wins. 9 goals scored in their last 5. On the other side, Orlando has been up and down this season. Right now, they're pretty down. Winless in their last 3 and shutout in their last 2 matches. Last time against Gotham, they came out losers 3-1, which I think was their last goal that they scored. Onto the roster, the big notes are that Krieger is out for injury and Zerboni was out for yellow card accumulation, which is interesting because according to the things, she's only had 1 yellow card. I don't know where the second one came from. I don't know. Either way, onto the formation, same 4-3-3 as last week. The only differences is we have Allie Long in for Zerboni. All right, so Ruby, any thoughts on that lineup?
Well, my first thought was that Hot is starting this game. I mean, this is a big game for the team and a big game for herself as well because it's either we win or we win to move forward. Even though I love seeing Hot getting a start, and I said this before that the Challenge Cup should have been like her tournament, I think Smith should have started this game.
I have complete faith in Mandy. It is what it is. But it was also Edmonds was in for Krieger as well. I have no issues with this lineup. Obviously, missing Kriegs and Zerboni as well. I think she's been playing too well. And yeah, it's going to be interesting. So let's get to just some of the takeaways. And Orlando just came out super aggressive. They were taking out, they took out two of their own players in the first 5 minutes. Like, they were just super over the top aggressive. Orlando was first and second ball. In my head, I was like, this can't be sustainable. And referring to Orlando just taking players out, the ref is going to have to pull some cards eventually. And he did after they scored. But Gotham overcomes a large possession deficit in the first half and controls the game for most of the second. They end up with 7 shots on target to Orlando's 2. Monashim gets an amazing goal assisted by Midge Purse. Ultimately, it felt like the game went another minute or two. Gotham could have pulled something out, but, you know, it never came.
Yeah, they definitely ran out of time. And Orlando fought as they, like you said, they fought as they had a chance to the semifinals. They had 1 point. 1 point. What are you going to do with 3 more? Mm-hmm. Nothing. But like you said, they were just playing for pride. Which was funny to me, but I guess you play to win. I don't know. Yeah. When you're the pride. Gotham's first half performance was less than impressive, let me tell you. It was a little disappointing because I thought they were going to like start like the last 2 games where they were coming really strong. But Orlando played really well in this first half to like keep them under control. And most of the game, I kept saying, just get out of there. Get out of there.
Yeah, they played the spoiler well. They were overly physical. They got a good goal, and then they just started time-wasting early. That's how it's done in playoff games, and hopefully this is a lesson well learned.
Yeah, I mean, Orlando, I think Orlando was ready for the WWE or something, but I mean, don't even get me started on the time-wasting. It was very frustrating, you know. Very frustrating. Gotham would try like to get the ball moving fast, and Orlando was just chilling, literally chilling. The one that stands out to me was when Strom like fouled Bruninha, and Brew tries to get the ball in play really fast, but Strom just lays down on the ground, just like hugging the ball. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah, he thought a couple of their players just like died on the field.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. I was like, get up. It was not bad.
But this is what makes the NWSL the best league in the world, and that's the parody of it. There aren't any gimmies in this league. No one really feels like an underdog. Orlando came in this game believing they could overrun Gotham, and they executed early. There's no easy games in this league, and you have to be prepared to fight every single match. Any player notes, Ruby?
Yeah, I like to mention that I would love to see Maitane Lopez get more minutes. I think she's a solid, like, she's solid. She should get more minutes. Why not?
Yeah. She's a very technical player, and she seems to be showing more and more as she's playing, getting used to her teammates. So, yeah, I'm excited about her. I do think that missing Zerboni was evident in this one, especially in the middle of the park. Like, I think Delaney and Long are very similar players. They're both super technical and strong on the ball, but they do leave a little bit to be desired in like that bite. And Zerboni just provides that field marshal mentality. And I think Orlando's aggression wouldn't have played so well if McCall was just patrolling the middle of the field.
Yeah. Now that you're talking about that bite, I want Delaney to have more of that bite and start striking hard to the goal. She hasn't scored a goal. She's been close to, but I feel like she'd rather pass the ball being unselfish. But like we said before, sometimes you need to be a little more selfish and just take it. Mm-hmm. Now I can't believe that during the game, I forgot that Zerboni was not playing because of the car accumulation. I was thinking like, all right, Zerboni will be a great sub for the second half. And then I realized she was not going to play. I got a little sad, not going to lie, especially when Orlando was playing that well.
Yeah, agree. Also, it's so good to see Bruninha back. Freeman and Edmonds, etc., are fine defenders, but Gotham missed that two-way play. Bruninha immediately starts getting forward. adding width, creativity, the ability to play players in. She gives balance to Nicewanger on the left side, who's been, Nicewanger's been the main source of Gotham's attack over the past month with Midge.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, Ruby, though. Taylor Smith said in the post game that every draw last season felt like a win, and this season, every draw feels like a loss. Sometimes us as commentators have to take a step back and just kind of appreciate where this team is and how well this team is playing. I'd rather be here feeling that way. Gotham was the second best team in the first 35, but not the last 65. They absolutely did enough to get the result that they needed. They just need to be a little bit sharper.
Yeah, but thinking about last season to this season, yeah, a complete 180 for this team. The players that were here last season have experienced the low lows. And this season, they are in a much better place. And I feel that it all starts with that winning mentality, which Juan Carlos and Jesús Botello are really big on. Got to keep in mind, this is a Gotham that it's rebuilding. This is Gotham's rebuilding season, which sometimes it doesn't feel like it because it's a day and night from last season, totally different team. And if they keep building on what they already have, this team is going to be really scary.
Yeah, speaking of building, honestly, like, I'm ready for our national teamers to be back. This team can compete with anybody. But we're about to add Mewis, Williams, O'Hara, Ooh. Farrelly, Bruninha, and Anamanu back into the mix. Honestly, the sky is the limit. It's frustrating Gotham didn't get the result. But, you know, rolling into the semifinals with that injection of players was pretty exciting to think about. It's things that we're not going to be there.
Yeah, sadly, all these players have exited the World Cup, but they're coming in and they're coming back to the league with that fire in them from the World Cup. So it will be interesting to see how they come back, especially the U.S. Nationals. They are heartbroken, really heartbroken, because we all thought they were going to the final. So now they have to come back. And they're thinking about the Olympics now. So they have to like really shine out there because they want to make it to the Olympics. You best believe they want redemption and they will work so hard to get that.
Well, probably the player I'm most excited about returning, obviously Lynn Williams is important, but I want to see Christy Mewis.
Yes.
Like just untethered.
Yes.
She's not stressed about the World Cup anymore, making that roster. This is going to be a Christy that is free, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch her play, and probably to the best of her abilities. I can't wait.
Yes. Yes. We have a lot to say about Christy and in this World Cup. How did she only get 1 minute? How is that even possible? Like, in whose head you only give her 1 minute? And then in that, after that, she comes and crushes her PK. It's just amazing. And when she comes back, I think she's going to come back and she's going to be like, you see, this is why you should have put me in. She's going to like show all her talents out there when she comes back to Gotham.
Agree. Post-game quotes. I had asked Amoros what his words were to the team after such a tough. And he said that he told the squad that he was very proud of the team. Even though it was a draw, they want to be a team that wins every game. They want to be at the top of the league. They want fans to enjoy every game. And he told them to keep their heads up because they are winners.
Yeah, those are great words for the team, especially in this tough loss that, you know, for them. Like you said before, they were looking at this game as another like championship game, just, you know. And it's just great to see the coach support and belief in the team.
Yeah, right. This is a fun one. So Shim jokes that beating Portland the other week was great and also helped her find a bit of closure on her career. So that was.
Yeah. And hopefully they get to do it again October 7th when they face Portland again.
Let's go. All right, Ruby, any stats of the game?
So for this stat, Gotham has won 9 games, 6 draws, and 7 losses against Orlando.
Yeah, pretty even.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ruby, stats are funny. If you look at the last 2 games that we're covering, Gotham was at 35% possession in the first half against both the Courage and Orlando, but for completely different reasons. Obviously, Gotham turned around to this last game, they turned around a 35% possession all the way to a 57% possession. In the end, it was a tale of two halves.
Yes.
Let's get to player of the match. On Twitter, over Gotham Pod, fans chose Shim. Thanks to the fans who voted. Do you agree, Ruby?
I do agree. Player of the match, Mana Shim. I mean, she only played 10 minutes plus stoppage time, but her impact in this game was huge. And you saw her when she came in. She came into the pitch with a little paper on her hand, like giving all these players directions and instructions what to do next. And I feel that's when the game turned around and we were able to score. And after that, I don't know how she was able to go unnoticed and scored an amazing goal. She is the player of the match for me. I mean, for her first goal with Gotham and her first goal since August of 2015.
And she scored it from the left back position, which is interesting. They pushed Nicewanger to the 10 and they put Shim in left back. And yeah, it's just an interesting sequence and I'm glad it worked out the way it did. I think Nicewanger is my player of the match. I think she's been unreal. She's creating so many chances. It's good to see her in the 10 to finish out the game, as we talked about earlier. She's also getting better on as the physical side of the game. Like start to finish, I think she was the best player on the pitch for either team.
Yeah, rookie of the year.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, the Challenge Cup ends for us at tied with 11 points with the Courage. But because of the Courage destroyed a couple teams, they had a 10 goal differential better than us, I believe. Or I think it ended up with 7 more goal differential than us.
I have to say this. I kind of blame the rain, the weather delays for Gotham not making it to the semifinals. I mean, I think if 2 games were postponed and then when they played Washington, they had another rain delayed and in that game they were winning. But after they came back from the rain delayed, they just got destroyed. So I kind of blame it on the weather delays.
Well, we can only look forward now, in which we're going to look forward to the San Diego Wave. Back to reality. Attention turns to the regular season. We get a break until 10 p.m. August 19th away again at San Diego. Going into this one, Gotham is in 3rd place in the regular season standings, 1 point from the leader, the Courage. 7 games left with a great shot at the Shield. Gotham has yet to beat. This is true. Gotham is yet to beat or draw the Wave in their 3 matches against them.
Man.
Better than that, Gotham has yet to score a goal against the Wave. They've been outscored 8-0 in their last 3 attempts. The Wave are 5 points from 1st place and 6th. There's a lot of congestion at the bottom of the table, and they are essentially playing for their playoff lives. Your thoughts on this matchup, Ruby?
My first thought is, I do not need that negativity right now, Gary. All those stats that you gave were like so negative. But hopefully we can turn it around in the next game. Honestly, is Morgan even going to be back? Probably not. Hopefully not, because she's been scoring on us a lot. But there's no denying that San Diego is really good. They're a really good team. But if we get the Gotham we saw in the last 10-15 minutes of the game against Orlando, I think we can win.
Yeah, we should have all of our national team players back and up and running. So this is going to be a pretty interesting roster. And it's going to be really interesting to see what lineup Amoros comes out with into this one. He seems to have really focused in on some players like Martin and Zerboni. Who's he actually going to choose for this starting 11 with all these players back? The roster looks absolutely incredible on paper. So technically, we have 3 games left with Stengel. I think the possibilities are endless. Williams is the wild card. Where does she fit in this lineup? Like, is she going to be up as a 9? Is she going to be out wide? Is out wide left? Is she going to come out of the midfield? That's going to be interesting with Stengel on this roster.
Yeah, out wide for Williams. I think a front line of Midge, Stengel, Williams would be interesting to see.
Yeah, ridiculous. So what do we manifest this week?
To beat the Wave. I know it's not really next week, but I'm going to keep manifesting to beat the Wave. What about you?
I'm manifesting some sleep. I had one day where I had 9 hours of sleep. It was ridiculous.
I know. I saw that you sent me that the text and I was like, wow, look at you. You got three days of sleep worth of sleep.
Yeah. All right. And I'm just going to say go Japan.
Yes. Why not? Go Japan. Right.
Ruby, I'm just ready for this break. We deserve it. I can't wait to talk about the incredible story that is the Jamaican national team, Hugh Menzies, Sadella Marley, and the Reggae Girls. Let's get to it, shall we?
Let's go. Welcome to a special Soccer Over Gotham World Cup interview. I'm Ruby Pinto, social media creative and host, and I'm also here with producer, editor, and host Gary Gibson. This is an interview we have been wanting to have for a while. There are so many incredible stories in this World Cup, perhaps none better than the Reggae Girls of Jamaica. To help us tell the story and a little bit about his own is a former Gotham FC interim coach and former Jamaica women's national team coach, Hugh Menzies. As you'll find out, there's so many layers to this story, so we cannot wait to tell this story. So welcome to the show, Hugh Menzies. How are you?
I'm great. I want to know how many layers you want. That's what I want to know. You're right. There's a lot of layers to it.
Yeah, we'll take one at a time. We'll get there. Okay. But Hugh, we're super excited to talk to you. Like, first, I think I do speak for the fans, the players, Cloud9 supporter group, and we just thank you for all that you did for the club last year in your short time here with Gotham. I know last week we talked to Nicole Baxter and your name got brought up, and immediately she's like, I love that dude. Yeah. And
Good kid.
She is. I know it was not an easy position to be in, and we're definitely going to talk about that briefly later. But I really wanted to get to this interesting and incredible story of the rise of the Reggae Girls and how you helped build that foundation and the trajectory that they're currently on. And I know that your time is limited. You got a big day tomorrow, but I hand the interview over to Ruby. Before I do, I just have one question for you as a starter. I'm just curious, Hugh, of your initial thoughts on the expanded field at the World Cup, so many debutants and the level that they're playing at. The underdogs are rising. I mean, just this morning, Nigeria took England to penalties, which is just, it was unthinkable 4 years ago. Incredible. So I'm curious what you think of the growth of the sport and this World Cup itself.
I personally think we've left out some more countries. You know, and the thing is, the growth is unbelievable. I'd like to see it grow even more because if you start looking at some of these rosters, you start realizing some of the players are playing at big clubs and people don't really recognize that, or big leagues, I should say. So, you know, if we're talking about growing the game, that's obviously that's the biggest platform, and we need to use that platform. And I would love to see it grow a little bit more in the next World Cup. But what a World Cup are we watching right now? It's unbelievable. Yeah. And, you know, it's nice to see that my country is doing well. And, you know, we had projected that this was the World Cup we were going to make. We're going to be debutants, but we got a little bit of a luck 4 years ago. And it turned out to be great because it just provides some more experience for these players.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And how Gary said, we wanted to talk about the rise of the Reggae Girls. And I wanted to start with Sadella Marley, Bob Marley's daughter, who is also ambassador of the Jamaica's women's national team. What can you tell us about her and her impact in this program?
Well, we wouldn't be having this podcast if it wasn't for Sadella. So let's make that very clear. when she reached out to me 2015, 2014, I think it was qualifying for the 15 World Cup. She wanted me to kind of get involved. The first thing she said, "Hugh, this is not you can't get paid. We can't afford you." And I'm like, "Where do I need to do to help my country?" Because that was my main thing. And you know, probably, I don't know if you guys do your research, but the main focus for me wasn't the World Cup, was mainly helping women empowerment, and which is a huge factor in my country that we struggle with from a cultural standpoint. And when she came to me and we started talking a little bit about that, it just made me even more want to be more part of the program and try to push that. But Sudella is the pioneer behind everything that we've done and the program has accomplished so far. Without her, we wouldn't be where we are, to be honest with you. We had to join forces with her to kind of fight through some things with the Federation, and she was right there with two and two, nail and nail with me, and I can honestly say that we wouldn't have got through where we are today without her. So she's a major factor in the success they're seeing right now.
And I think Sudella said for her love of soccer came from her father. And she said in the CNN article that had not been for her father, she says her father always told her that he wanted to be a soccer player. She said daddy played every day. She said he would play anywhere. He was on the road. You would find a field. You'd find a team. You play. And her love came from him.
Well, you know, and I'm going to date myself back a little bit, but when I was around 14, in Kingston, Bob came to our practice, my youth practice, and he drove up in his BMW, and we always thought that BMW meant Bob Marley and the Wailers, so we thought the car was named after him. But but he rolled up, and I remember him playing, and he wasn't the greatest soccer player. He wasn't technical. I remember him just running, though. He was running all over the place, want to get a touch on the ball. And it was kind of ironic back then that, you could tell the passion that he had for the game, because he took the time out of his schedule to get a game in, you know what I mean? And with young kids. And he didn't care how small you were or whatever, he'll run over you. But I remember him, and I could see when Sudella came to me and told me about how much her dad loved the game, it definitely resonated back to where I first saw him play and the passion he had when he rolled out of that BMW. It was unbelievable, because, we're in awe that Bob's already here. And then he started playing, and I remember him towing the ball, and I'm like, I'm not that good of a player, but
I guess the effort counts.
No, he loved it. You could tell.
Yeah, and that was my next question. Like, how did she got in contact with you? But you said she called you up, and
I've been coaching in the States for a while, and we've accomplished some things, and I actually moved from Texas, where I helped build a big club there called Lone Star. So, we did fairly well. And then my mom got ill, so I moved to Florida to be with her. And then we were playing against, we actually won some state titles here. And the person that I beat, one of the teams I beat, he was close friends with Sudella. And, I think he went to her and then just kind of said, hey, we just played against a team. It's coached by a Jamaican, and, find out that he was part of the U.S. youth system, national team system and all that. And then she reached out to me. Her people reached out to me. We set up a meeting down in Miami. And I was like, man, I'm going to meet royalty here, because, the Marley family is just like, God sent, to our culture. So it was kind of ironic, because we met at a Italian restaurant in a mall, and I remember she walking to the restaurant, and a bunch of kiosks and all that, and she just ran over to a kiosk and like, where did you get all this stuff from? Where did you? It was about the Bob Marley stuff the guy was selling, and she wanted to see all the purchase orders, and she was this woman right away. And then we got back in our meeting, and she said, 33% of our income comes from people, lawsuits that we have to file, because people just are selling things and black marketing our image. So but right at the bat, it set the tone right away.
Yeah.
And And it was just a pleasure meeting her and understanding her vision on what she wanted this program to look like. And I was so happy that I was part of it. And, you know, we together, we were a good team. And then obviously, look, you can bear that, you know, you can see what we've accomplished.
Yeah. And she said about you, she said, he was a calm person until you see him on the field. And then he turns into a little chihuahua. She says he's lovely. He cares about the girls. He cares about this program. And he cares about football. Just curious how much of that is true. And what does that say for your soccer
values? Well, you know, obviously, when you start coaching, it's in a competitive environment, right? And you want players to be competitive. And yes, I am. I'm more of an observer away from the field. I observe a lot more. I read body languages. I do a little bit more observing than anything else than speaking. But when it gets to the heat of the battle and the competitive nature and the teaching components of trying to help these athletes in front of me, I do become a coach, so to speak. And obviously, you know, when you're in a teaching environment, you have to get into, you have to show the passion and so forth. So yes, she is correct.
Yeah. But so when you saw the state of the team, what were your initial thoughts and the plan of action?
So that's a funny story. So they were trying to qualify for the 2015 World Cup, and they were coached by a coach called Maren Gordon. And they, you know, they came up to Orlando. We actually had a place for them to stay. We had our facilities for them to train on because they were lacking funds, right? So we kind of hosted them. And so I went over there and first of all, they didn't have shoes. They didn't have sports bras. They didn't have anything. So, you know, with our contacts with Nike and, you know, just a few colleges in the area, I made some phone calls. And the next day, people are shipping stuff in and shoes and everything that we needed to get for them. And, you know, and that's when I just fell in love that I had to do something with this program. Then we get on the field. And you could tell some of the technical abilities of individual, but the work ethic was poor, very poor, you know, not to par. Based on their athleticism, they weren't fit. They weren't, you know, one or two of them was playing in Russia at the time, and one was playing in Israel. And so it was a long way to go. And I was like, and I was trying to be nice about things and trying to communicate with Sedella, who they just finished, I think at the time they lost to Trinidad in the finals of the Caribbean Cup 2-1. So they're on a little bit of a high, and I didn't want to really burst their bubble, so to speak. So because I just looking at the talent pool, the talent was there, but just the work ethic wasn't. But anyway, they went on. I didn't get through to the qualifiers, and then she after that came to me and said, hey, do you really want to do this? Like, you know, seriously want to be the head coach? And I said, you know, I said that I'm going to have to revamp the program, you know, and it's just not where it needs to be. And she was like, really? Because she got attached to some of those players, you know,
yeah,
you know, and all that. And I said, yeah, we're really going to have to revamp. And it caused a little bit of a friction because, you know, it's, you know, she got attached to some of those players and she didn't know the level, so to speak. So,
yeah.
So what we did, we went down to Jamaica, and I'll never forget this. I took my strength coach, and this guy is the one that really changed our program, Will Hitzelberger. He's now the fitness guy that's with the team right now. And Will does my club here. He has a company here, a gym here called Spectrum, and it's unbelievable. Our club goes to it. So I took Will down with me. And that was his first time going to Jamaica. He thinks he's Jamaican now, but he eats more oxtail than anybody else I know. But yeah, so we went down there, and I remember we brought the team out, and obviously it was big news, you know, new coach coming in, the media and all that. So we ran the beep test. And you know, and they've never done a beep test. You know, there was a couple players that played in college that was here, and so they were familiar with it. And so I told them they gotta run this beep test. And we had about 27 players in camp. Yeah. And we start running the beep test. And so we knew the USA average at the time was around 48 on the beep test. And so we figured if we get some in the 30s, we may be okay. So at about the first, about 12, they're 12 in, they're going, it started, and about on the 12th one of them dropped out. And we didn't say anything, you know, because beep test is kind of, you kind of see who can get to the end of things. So I think they recognized that I wasn't upset that she dropped out early. So everybody started dropping out, right? And I'm sitting there, and Will knows me, so he thought I was going to just blow a gasket, right? And I'm just watching them drop, and there was one girl who was a Rhodes Scholar at the time. She was playing on the team from Jamaica, very smart girl, Sharona Forrester. She was running. She was a little fit, real fit. She kept going, and there was another kid from the U.S., Chinelu Asha. And the third person dropped out at around 21, and then they went by themselves up to about 34. Okay. So after we were finished and you know, it was over, we actually did a session, and at the end of the session I just looked at the two players and said, "All right, you two are the only ones I'm gonna pick for the team." And they all looked at me, and Jamaica went ballistic because I just cut the entire team. And I told them I want to focus on the young players.
Yeah.
And the Bunny Shaws of the world, and, you know, all these Kanya Plummers and Denisha Blackwood, they're on the younger youth team. Yeah. So I walk into the Federation office to let them know. And they said, "You know what? By the way, we're going to put the program in dormant, the program right now, the women's national team program."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Really?" So you know, at the time I was a little upset. You know, I felt like I was set up with this whole thing. And we come down there, and now the program has been dormant for 2 years. They're going to dormant for 2 years.
So this was around 2015?
2016.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, so we actually, it turned out to be a blessing because the youth teams are still active. And so what we started to do is get more familiar with the youth teams. And then we start getting those players out of Jamaica because there was no league, no domestic league for them to play in. They were playing in the high schools, which is, you know, high school is high school, but and it's only a 2-3 month league. So we start plucking them out, sending them to college, junior colleges, sending them to boarding schools, and try getting them out. And because I knew somewhere down the line, FIFA is gonna come knocking and say, "Hey, we gotta start qualifying." And yeah. So we sat down with Sadella and said, "Hey, let's really focus on the young teams." And she was a little bit upset at the time because I just got rid of players that she thought were actual soccer players. And they were good soccer players, but mentality, they didn't have it. So we actually start, when we heard that we're going to have a draw of the CONCACAF qualifying, we felt like, you know what? Well, we're okay, because we were having these backdoor camps at my facilities, and obviously Lauren Donaldson was my assistant at the time, and we were just, you know, trying to do it on our own, you know, fund it on our own, and just trying to keep the program, you know, going. The U20 qualifiers were going on, so we had a little team there, U17s. Lauren ended up winning the Caribbean Cup for the U17s. And so we were slowly building it, and you know, and then when they decided to go qualify, we drew the three French teams, Haiti, and we had to play them in Haiti, which was if you've ever been to Haiti, I don't know if you have, but playing in Haiti is no joke. And if you sit down with a Tony DiCicco or Bruce Arena, they'll tell you what Haiti is about. And it's we talk about when teams are, you know, CONCACAF is probably an easy route for people to go to the World Cup. They're totally a negative there. I mean, playing in that environment, you can't even imagine. All right. Mm-hmm. And it's not a soccer thing when it comes to playing.
Yeah.
In Haiti. It's just a survival thing. And so we ended up had to go there for the first round because only one gets out of the bracket. And we actually beat Martinique first. Guadalupe first. We beat them like 12-0. And then the next, and it was 4 p.m. on one of the hardest turf you'll ever be around.
Yeah.
And and Haiti had all the night games, right? Because they didn't want to play in the heat, and so we played in the heat, and then we actually beat Martinique 4-0, which Haiti beat them 4-0 at the same time, and then we were up watching the Guadalupe game because they were playing them, and they got a penalty kick with like the 89th minute of the game, they were winning 11-0. And the phantom penalty kick came out because if they didn't score 12 goals, then we're ahead of them, right?
By a goal. Yeah.
So they get a penalty kick, and my God, this little girl in the goal from Guadalupe saved it. And we're like, I told Lauren, I said, Lauren, this might be a sign. You know, I think we may be getting through this first round. So we end up we get ready to go play Haiti, in Port-au-Prince, and this stadium holds about 12,000. So we're driving from the hotel, and I realize that we're not on the same route going to the hotel, and I just, you know, we had a chaperone from the Haitian Federation. I looked at him and I said, guys, you guys can't be doing this crap now. I mean, we need to get to the stadium on time because I don't want my team rushing or anything like that because right now you're just playing games. So I called him out and, you know, I plugged in my into my phone directions and we followed my phone right to the stadium. We got into the middle of Port-au-Prince, and if you ever driven in Haiti, it's probably a 4-lane road, but there's 8 lanes. There's 8 lanes of cars driving. So we rolled up in there, and I tell you, the amount of people that were around the stadium, and then the people that are in the stadium, I would say it was around 30,000 people.
Wow.
And it's a 12,000 seat stadium.
Yeah.
And they have it's caged in. They have a cage around the stadium. So it's very intimidating. You could probably smell the visitors' locker room a mile away. And so we rolled up in there, and I told my equipment guy, I said, we're not bringing any equipment. We're going to dress in our game stuff at the hotel. We're gonna have the balls that we need, but we don't need anything else. And we had to have another set of uniforms because the type of uniforms our girls were wearing you lose like 10 pounds in the first half, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we had to carry another set of uniforms. And so that's all we had. We walked in there, we went out and we warmed up. I mean, people were just going nuts. And I told Lauren, I said, Lauren, if we ever pull this thing off, I don't know how we're going to get out of here. We're going to have to figure a way out, how to get out. And you could tell the fear in our players. It was very intimidating, extremely intimidating. We asked them for some ice, and they brought a block of ice, a big block. So we lift the block up, dropped it on the floor to break the ice up. And we had to unsharpen the edges because the ice, because it would, you know, little things like that that we were doing. And so we actually went out. They scored first. If you know, they have a couple, Demone, they have a couple of really good players. And they scored, and that roar, I'll never forget it. The roar that came out of that stadium when they scored. I was right beside Lauren. He could not hear me. And then they actually scored again, 2-0. And we're like, crap. We're gonna lose this damn thing. And I thought we had more fight in us. And then right before the half, Trudy Carter scored a goal, made it 2-1. And it was very quiet. You know, it was right like 2 minutes before the half. So we went in the locker room, and Ruby and Gary, we did not talk one word about soccer. It's about persevering, what we've done on to get to this point, the things that we need to do to represent our country. And, you know, we have a saying in Jamaica, we're little, but we're talawa, meaning that we're a small country, but we have a big, big fight in us, right? So we went back up there, and, you know, I tell you, man, those kids played their hiney up. Bunny got a breakaway. They pulled her down, and we got a free kick. They didn't give a red card because we're in Haiti. And we accept all that. And Bunny bended around the wall, made it 2-2. She's running over to the fence and holding our crest. And I'm like, oh, my God. Go grab Bunny quickly before they play. Because, you know, you got all these dolls and stuff in the stands. And they're, you know, it's you know, a lot of Obia. We call it Obia voodoo. So we scored about 10 minutes to go. We had one of the young Swabies. This is her first time ever playing for us. She just got back from the USU-20 camp, and she came down there on her own. She had to come late because she was in school, and she was so intimidating. We needed to cap her. We needed to get her cap because the U.S. was about to cap her. And we had the oldest baby, so we wanted the younger one. So we're 2-2. We just need to get a draw. And so we went in with three. We went back to a 3-5 back, and we slotted her in with like, she got in about 4 minutes in, and we held it out 2-2. The Haitian team was on the ground crying. We're getting ready to run now. I mean, we're getting ready to get out of there. And my God, the whole stands got up and clapped us.
Oh my God.
Just clapped us. And they were so impressed with the football that we played. And we have a saying within our group now. If you want to make this team, you got to go through that whole deal. If we don't feel you could go through that, you won't make this team. And it was unbelievable. And it was just something that you put so much fear into yourself, and all of a sudden, the thing that you were most scared about rewarded you, and it was definitely an eye-opening for us, and we felt like we had something special going here. We went back, and we never played in our country since 06, because the Federation just refused to have a game with the women. So I told them we're going to play the Caribbean Cup, the next round in Jamaica, and I made a big deal out of it. Sidella backed me on it, and so we ended up getting – the first game we had there, we had like 500 people, 35,000 seat stadium. 500 people wow. in Jamaica. So we actually was playing good football. So the former prime minister of Jamaica, he's a football guy. He owned a football team. So he comes out to the game, Edward Siaga, and he comes out and he's like, man, they're playing with four back. Their two center backs are wide. Outside backs are high. They're playing the right way of football. And he start taking notes and the radio would go to him and say, hey, what do you think? He said, I'm stop watching the reggae boys. I'm watching the reggae girls. The next game we played Bermuda and we had about 4,000 people. And then we played another game because we had to play four games. I had to play Trinidad, which was their independence at the time. So they were fired up and they scored in the first 2 minutes of the game, come running over to me, beating their chest. And we end up beating them 6-1. And so the last game we're playing Cuba, now the stadium's almost half full.
Okay.
So we wanted to introduce the team to our Jamaican people. And we did that. And they fell in love with us. And then, so we start getting a little bit more support from Jamaica, going into things. And then obviously we went down to we went down into Colombia to play a group of games down in South America to kind of see where we were. And we lost to Venezuela 2-1. We lost to Costa Rica 2-1 on a late penalty kick. And then we end up beating Colombia 3-1, which is so ironic. We're playing Colombia.
Yeah.
So we end up, and they actually fired the coach right on the spot. I remember that. They came right down. I shook his hand. And he said, well, they just fired me. And because it's a nation that's never, they haven't heard that we actually played football. So we had a kind of a B team, really, but we still had Bunny, and she was still in school, college, and all that. So it was a young team we took. And then, so we kind of felt like, you know, we had a group of girls that we probably could do something. Because we weren't sure where we were at. And then we had the qualifiers in Texas. And we played Canada, and we lost 2-0, and it's the best we ever played defensively. Low block, you know, lines were tight. We lost to Bunny, missed two sitters. And then we had to play Costa Rica, and who we've had a little bit of history in the youth side with the coach. So it was a little bit of an animosity going on. And we were 0-0 at the half, and Bunny was awful. And I tore into her at halftime, got into her. She comes out and she scores at 2 minutes to go in the half. Right? She scores a goal. And if you know, look back, and I subbed her off because we wanted, you know, obviously we have another game to play. Mm-hmm. I subbed her off, and the expression on her face was like, she was about to kill me, right? And I'm in deep down in myself, I'm smiling, right? Because she got the goal that we won 1-0. And then we went and beat Cuba. And then we went up to Dallas. Then we had to play the U.S. and Panama. And it was around 80-something degrees in McAllen, Texas. And up in Dallas, it was 40 degrees and raining. And we didn't have no sweats. The Federation didn't give us any sweats. They ran out of money because they didn't think we would have qualified for the next round. Yikes. So I had to, you know, they call me Mr. Swiper. That's what. So we had to get our stuff. We had, you know, up to Dallas, and then we pulled it off, man. We knew we weren't going to beat the U.S., so we kind of held back on a lot of the players. And then we knew Panama was the game that we needed to win. And we you know, and the crazy thing, when we got to Dallas, we got there late. We're getting ready to eat at the hotel. And we realized if they're speaking Spanish to us and they're you know, and all this, and the food's not what we requested.
Yeah.
And the manager came to me and she said, I went to the manager, I said, what the heck is this? She said, well, aren't you Costa Rica? I thought we were Costa Rica. So I went back to the team and I said, you know what? We're getting out. We're going to qualify for this World Cup. But we get no respect. And it was kind of, it was just a great journey. And, you know, obviously the rest is history, but you know, that's the tale of it, you know, and we figured that we would have probably not get in the first World Cup, but the kids just felt, you know, got right through all that adversity, and this it became a must for them, you know, and the extra effort, and you know, we've done, and you know, the crazy thing in that game, I know if you guys remember, I switched the goalkeepers right for the PKs, because we simulated a whole PK thing. The girl that hit the PK in that game, she actually missed it in the training session. Yep. And she wouldn't leave the park that we were in. We were supposed to play train in a dome. And the rain just stopped. And I was like, and Lauren looked at me and said, we're training outside because it was cold. And we're going to train outside. And my buddy of mine, who was working at Under Armour at the time, just shipped in some Under Armour stuff for us. And it came right in time. So we trained outside. We simulated the PK. Dom missed hers because we did all the walk-up, everything. She missed hers. And we're going back into the bus. I see her out there. She hit two by herself. Nobody. She hit two right up in the upper 90. And I said, Lauren, she's taking it. And she's the one that hit the one that we got through to the World Cup. So, you know, it's a great story. And it's like it was meant to be. And everything that's happening right now with the team, I'm not surprised.
Exactly. I mean, all the girls and you have helped them like go through all these highs and lows, especially a lot of struggle. And where would you say the program is now and what the future holds? Obviously, they had to create a GoFundMe for this World Cup to get to travel.
Well, you know, nothing's changed much as far as the Federation's concerned. Yeah. I'm going to leave it like that because, you know, I've had my fights and struggles with them, and everybody knows my relationship with the Federation. You know, Sidella has been there toe-to-toe with them, and she's stepped up already to help as much as she can. Mm-hmm. I keep telling her don't do it because the more she does it, the more the Federation doesn't spend. So, you know, they've gone through the adversity, but, you know, like when I was over there, we were in there playing the Brazil game. You know, we're used to adversity. You know, it's like,
yeah,
we still have a game. You know, people are like, well, you're going through all this stuff. And the girls are like, we've been there, done this. You know, this is just, we're here to play. We're here to get through. Obviously, the France game was huge for them, set the tone for them. And it's kind of ironic that they got through to the next round without Bunny scoring a goal. So, you know, and she didn't play in one of the games. And so the depth of the team is there now. And they understand that defense is going to get them through things. I haven't given up a goal yet in the World Cup. The only team right now that hasn't given up a goal. And, you know, so it's been good, you know, and Lauren's got them going. And, you know, the staff that they have are good people and, you know, they're right on track. They're right on track, and you know, I might be behind the scenes on helping things, but they're the one that are going out in the field and getting it done. So
yeah, and like you said, they have played Colombia before, and their head coach got fired. Now they're going to play Colombia again. Hopefully, the coach doesn't get fired. But yeah. How do you describe this team heading into this match with Colombia?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, it's not the same Colombia team we played, I'll tell you that much.
Well, yes.
Back then, I mean, they've added a few pieces. They still have a couple of those young players that are playing in Spain right now. So they're a good team. I was very impressed with them against Germany because they actually outplayed Germany. I mean, people think it was an upset, but after looking at the game, I mean, those two goals were a heck of a goal. I think the first goal was the best goal in the World Cup so far. But I think they're a good team, good side. I mean, they defend well. The goalkeeper, I know the goalkeeper, she used to play at University of Miami. So I know who she is, and she's come a long way. She's really held up that group defensively. And then, you know, they have this special player up top that the Linda that is pretty amazing right now. And so you know, we have our work cut out for us. I mean, it's not an easy go, you know, ride for us, but we feel confident, you know, and I know I spoke to Lauren and all that and spoke to some of the girls, and you know, they just can't wait to get on the pitch and get after it.
And I wanted to, before we let you go, I just have a couple questions about, you know, about your time at Gotham. And I'm curious, like, how would you describe your time here at Gotham for those couple of months that you were here? Mm-hmm. And would you, like, overall positive?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest with you, you know, Yael reached out to me. You know, I guess they were getting rid of those, you know, the split parts with their new coach that they had. Parkinson. So she said, you know, hey, can you just come in and finish up the season for us? And then we'll reevaluate, you know, if you really want to do this, you know. And I said, well, I'm not. My mom was here at the time. She passed 2 months ago, but she was alive at the time. And I'm like, this is my main focus right now, and getting her through things. And then, and the club, you know, my club is here. And I've always... I have good people work for me, so I can get out and leave. It's like what I did with Jamaica. You know, the club still runs itself. So, you know, I said, okay. And Nathan is our assistant GM who I coached in Texas. So, yeah, Nathan played for me there. So, you know, it was tough to say no to those two because they're such good kids, you know. And I've known Yael through the U19 World Cup team that she played with. And so I told him I'll do it 2 months. I'll get him 2 months. Went in, it was a little bit, locker room wasn't what it needs to be at the time. You know, I thought, you know, they're in a little bit of a funk. They had some good players. I thought the roster was pretty good. But, you know, it's always, you know, some things you can mend and some things you can't. And it's going to take somebody coming in and kind of bringing in new faces and get rid of things. And, you know, and that's what it was going to take. And I came in right before the trading deadline. And, you know, the only person that I really felt like we needed to go after, and I give Yael a lot of credit. I was watching the U20 World Cup, and they said, so which player you really want? And I pointed at the TV, and I said, Bruninho, the captain of the Brazilian World Cup team. And they looked at me like, what? I said, so, by the way, Jill Ellis is down there, so I'll call Jill and see if she knows, find out who the agent is. And I gave Yael and Nathan credit, man. They got it done. Bernina was here. She wasn't ready. She was unfit because it took a while to get her work permit. She came in. Everybody was like, I think you made a mistake. I said, no, I ain't made no mistake here. That kid can play. I'm just telling you right now, that kid can play. And she's going to be a stellar player in this league. Yeah. And if you notice, I didn't play her till the last half of the Portland game.
Yeah.
And everybody was kind of wondering and giving me a lot of stick. Hey, you're going to play her. But she wasn't ready. She physically wasn't ready. And mentally, you know, I mean, coming to a country that you've never been by yourself, you don't speak the language, you get put in a room. Pickett was her roommate. And she just got traded in from Kansas. And the kid was just... You know, I was upset with the league because there's nothing layout for these kids coming in and to transition. And I made it very clear to the league that they need to have something in place to help us to transition these kids, whether it's translators or, and it's probably up to the club, but you need to put restrictions on the club to get that done then. So I made it very clear that we needed to do a better job of transitioning these players. So man, she came out to training, she was god awful, to be honest with you. The first day, I remember Becky Tweed looking at me like, I'm like, Becky, let me tell you something. You just got back from the U-20 World Cup, because she was the assistant coach.
Yeah.
And I said, this kid can play. I'm telling you, I saw him thank TV. This kid can flat out. And she's the captain of the U-20 Brazilian team. And that's not an easy thing to handle. So we waited, and I was patient about it. Everybody was eager for her to play right away, and I didn't feel like she was ready yet. And what a half she had in Portland. She did a little spin move, and everybody was like, yeah. Wow, and, you know, wowing and all this. But I knew deep down the kid could play. She got better every training session. She felt more comfortable. I didn't know it was Portuguese at the time. The only thing I knew was Budalang, you know. So I would come up at me, and she was getting happier and happier, and she's gonna be a stellar player for that league. And she made the Brazil team, but she didn't get to play. And I could see, you know, it's a little bit more seniority in national teams, but she's gonna be a heck of a player. And you know, Carlos came in and it made it a lot easier for him to kind of, you know, he had to make the changes. We had a long conversation about the team. And he's a, you know, he's a great coach, great understanding of the game, understanding of the league. You know, is so, I'm so impressed with him that he's learned the league so quickly, because it's not the same like in England or in Spain. It's a little different. And then, you know, Hack is assistant, is the same assistant with the Jamaica team. So I knew Hack worked for me down here in Florida. So we kind of, you know, we've helped the process there, you know, and Yael and you know, those ownership group are good people. I honestly told them, I said, hey, this league, if you do guys do it right, and if you follow that Korean lady down in Washington, the way she's handling her business, this league could be fantastic, because she's the ultimate ownership that we have in that league, and she's going to make sure that this league is successful. So, I honestly think that from top to bottom, it could be the best league in the world, without a doubt.
You touched on this a little bit in your answer, but that last game at Red Bull Arena was one of my favorite sporting moments that I've been to. It was incredible. To go down 3-1, to come all the way back.
What's ironic was, you know, and, you know, I mean, you guys know Ashlyn Harris, so.
Yeah.
Ashlyn comes in, and she wanted to play in the game. And I'm like, Ashlyn, we're not going to do that. She was coming back from her knee injury, and she wanted to play. And, you know, Allie looked at me, Allie Kriegs, and she's like, and I'm like, we ain't doing this. You know, I want her to have a conscience about this whole process of whether she wants to be a pro or not continually. Because I think there's Asha brings a whole lot of value to the game. Mm-hmm. So she comes in and she's like, Q, you know what just happened? They're painting our locker room. They're getting ready to celebrate the shield. And they brought all their sponsors. They brought all these people. And this is F this. I'm like, Ashlyn, slow down. I know you're upset. But we're gonna fight through this game. Right? And that when I'm going back in the locker room, I'm gonna make it motivational. We're gonna use that as one of our deals to get them going. And sure enough, man, the girls go out there and they got after it. I remember Allie was there. Allie wanted to, she wanted to, but you know, Allie, a midfielder.
Oh, Allie Long.
Allie Long wanted to play too, because she was back in action training after the kids. And she was nipping at my ears. And I was like, no, you guys, You got to just sit back and cheer and let's see how this thing will. And, you know, to be honest with you, from the Seattle game that we played up in Seattle to that point, we were playing good football. The game against Courage, Dabena was just special. All right, I will give her that. But we were playing decent football. It wasn't the same football that I sat there and watched the first 20 minutes of in Seattle, because I was fuming. I was just like, this is not even close to soccer. So we transitioned and played good. And a lot of the teams that we played, the results were much better on the second go around. We just was unlucky. I mean, losing 1-0 penalty kicks, two games in Seattle. I thought we outplayed Seattle, but we gave up a PK at the end. And then, you know, same thing with the Courage game. You know, we gave up a penalty kick again, you know. So, but we were playing, we're trying to, I will give the young ladies credit that they adopted to the style of play, because I'm not a person to kick the ball down the field. I like to play through layers, and they adopted it, and they wanted to do that. You know, they wanted to do that. They just weren't doing it. And, and that game just showed a lot of their class. That last game, and Gary, you said it was one of your better moments in sport, and it's probably one of my highlights of sport. Just the whole demeanor, what happened in that locker room at that set, the halftime, and them coming out and just getting after it, and you know, Zaboni was just a woman, you know, in the middle of the park. She didn't want to lose, just good professional players, man. You know, the older players, I would give them a lot of credit, and look at what they're doing now. You know, a lot of it, obviously, Carlos made some changes, and I'm so happy for them and what they're doing. So,
one last question before we let you go. I'm just curious your thoughts on getting to coach Allie Krieger and what her legacy is within the sport.
Well, you know, I've been coaching for a long time now, and you kind of pick some of your players out as you go through your coaching career, and Allie's one of them that you you'll never forget, because she just makes you a better coach. She listens, she comprehends well. You could totally see that her dad was a coach, because her dad coached her in club. And I actually coached against her dad and her in youth. So it's been a long time. But what a professional. And, you know, she was here in Orlando before they went up there. So, and I've known Ashlyn since she's a kid. Never been around Allie as much, but I've been around Ashlyn. But what a professional player. And you know, she's going to leave the game. Obviously, she's won a World Cup, and, you know, I'm not sure she won two World Cups, but I can't remember.
Two. 15 and 19.
Was she on the 15? Yeah. But Kriegs is consummate pro. I mean, I know this is her last year. I still think she's got another year in her, but.
We all do.
But she's got a family now, and, you know, she's got way other things, more important things, I think she needs to focus on. But you're talking about one of those players that you just, you know, you this is why you do this business. You know, you want to go to training to see her. You want to sit down with her and film. You want to pick her brain on things. And, you know, she's so honest. She's so deliberate, you know what I mean? And in a very casual way, but she's correct, you know, and she got put up with Ashlyn too. So I give her a lot I got a lot of love for her.
That's amazing. Well, sadly, we come to the end of our interview. We thank you, Hugh, for taking the time to speak with us. A big day tomorrow as Jamaica faces off Colombia at 4 a.m. Eastern time. Good luck to them. You have all our support, Gary, from me, from Gary, all the fans. We all rooting for Jamaica to win this. So let's go, Jamaica.
All right. As we say in Jamaica, enough respect.
Yes. For the fans, we'll be back soon, Thursday or Friday, covering the Courage and Pride Challenge Cup matches and the last U.S. Women's National Team game against Sweden, and with our best friend of the show, Jenna Tonelli. First up, we are ready to root for the Reggae Girls to Jamaica tomorrow. Are you ready for this game, Hugh?
You better believe it, man. I don't think I'm going to bed. We've already created history, and I want to see more history. And yes. I'm just so proud of Lauren and his group and what Sadella has built for us and the country itself. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I obviously people think if we lose tonight, lose tomorrow, we fail. And for us, we feel like we fail, but because we feel that so confident that we can do it, and we've gone through so many hurdles, but we've done a lot, we've accomplished a lot, and I think the sky's the limit for that group. So I'm so proud of them.
Yeah, we're ready.
All right, I really appreciate your support too.
You're welcome. Let's go. Hi, everyone. This is Gary. Thank you for listening and supporting our project. Here are other ways you can support the show and connect with us. First, word of mouth is everything. So please share our show with anyone who might listen. Also, please rate us 5 stars on Spotify and review us on iTunes. You can purchase our merchandise at the TeePublic store. Join in the conversation on Twitter at OverGothamPod and Instagram at SoccerOverGotham. Lastly, you can email your thoughts and questions at soccerovergotham@gmail.com. Once again, thank you. Is Beto's a cage fighter in her time off?
She must be.
I think, yeah.